From Knockadoole to Ardmore, so much to do and see. Now, listeners, if you remember last week, and indeed the week before and subsequent weeks, we took a trip up the River Blackwater on the famous Kathleen and May, Mike and myself. We left it, Mike, and indeed we're now heading up to Drummanagh side, aren't we?
We are indeed, Noel.
Before we do,
to recap it, because I suppose we started off this as a series of three, because we actually thought we could do from Yall to Lismore in three shows, if you remember.
Yes.
So we kept kind of the series of three, but it actually, you know, we ran out of the usual time. So it's probably a series of five now, shows now at this stage, anyway, at this stage, to get us up to lovely Lismore.
Yes.
But do you know something? Because we did the first three recordings, kind of, Noel, and since then we went to, like, just a couple of things that happened, kind of, you know, the way some people would say, oh, I heard a show, but, you know, this bit and that bit. But amazing time, actually, with Knockanore. We went to Knockanore. You were in Knockanore.
Yes.
Michael Hosey was in Knockanore. There was
we had an amazing time there.
Listen, I never laughed so much as the guys there, and I really appreciate, you know, like Pat Casey, the chairman there, Pat Geary, Stephen Geary.
Yes.
All the lads there, you know, they were absolutely fantastic, and just, it's an amazing place. 2 days there, and I learned so much as well, because, you know, my mouth was open anyway, Noel, because of the amount of kind of local historians that they have there. For me, Frank Mills, it was great to talk to Frank.
Frank, of course, yes.
Everything about the bride.
A mind of information.
Oh, listen, the Blackwater and the bride, everything like that. I actually asked Frank, remember we're talking about the Glendine Road, and he also reckons it was a famine relief from the Harold Smiths.
Oh,
at the time,
yes,
as well. So
yes,
Frank
believes
that.
So Frank verified that.
He, as he said, he thinks as well that it was a famine relief as well. But also, like, guys like Niall O'Brien. I have Niall O'Brien's book in writing in front of the two of us here.
Yes, Blackwater and Bride.
Brilliant. Yeah. It's an encyclopedia.
It is, actually.
And just for yourselves, guys, there's so many books. We've loads of books in front of us here at the moment.
You have the illustrated guide from Blackwater to Ardmore.
And I actually have followed that one up. And then I was kind of using that as my base, and then using the other books, because there's Bill Power. He's got a new book called The Blackwater, The History. Absolutely amazing. But the best one, like, for a kind of a walking journey, is The Walking, The Munster Blackwater, by a local guy, Jim O'Malley. You know Jim.
I know Jim, yeah.
I actually met his sister and the brother-in-law walking the bank, the slot bank there,
the
one day as well.
Yeah.
So good morning to Jim. I don't know Jim. But the book is absolutely
fantastic. It gives a great detailed account of starting off with, say, and Kerry.
Absolutely.
Right down to the very, to most of the Blackwater.
All the ways down. But even, like, we'll say, as I said, Niall O'Brien was there. Donny O'Brien, he's like myself, he's in Yall now, but he was a tallow man.
Yes.
He does all the tallow history as well, and the Facebook history for tallow. Andy Kelly, the photographer, he was in the Moby Dick Festival there recently with all the Moby Dick
festivals. Yes, that's correct,
he does an awful lot there with Tom Finn as well, Connor as well. So many different people from Knockanore. And, you know, in the middle of the whole lot of them, our bold Mick Hackett there, right in the middle of them all, was Mick Hackett.
And he was a gem. Mike is a gem. Mike is a great addition to us here in Community Radio. Absolutely marvellous.
I was only thinking afterwards, like, I'd say, you know, if you licked the stamp and posted it to Pat Geary, you'd be co opted onto there, because he, you know, their little heritage society, because, you know, he'd have your DNA at that stage anyway.
He's brilliant, actually. A mind of information.
No, fantastic.
A mind of information.
Thanks again, guys. It was brilliant. And I'm just going to go back to this, because in fairness to Pat, they gave me a loan of their the journal, we'll say, the Historical Society, their annual as well. And one of the bits I missed, and it was done by Niall O'Brien, actually, was Temple Michael House. You know, we're talking about Temple Michael.
Yes, and everyone
brought it into it. And I'm not going to go too far over this one, because, but it was built before 1766 by a guy called Richard Dawson.
Right.
Now, I say before 1766 because in 1766, built sometimes before that. Now, you know, we were talking about Campfire House, Noel.
Yes.
And that was Sir Charles Lanyon. Now, Lanyon, now at the moment, is Lanyon Train Station in Belfast. You know, it's called after him.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then Capel Island is Capel Street in Dublin, is, you know, after the Capel, the Capel.
After D. Capel, that was the name. It was obviously a French name, was
well,
D. Capel.
And now it's Supple. So it is Supple now at this stage. It's changed its name. But Richard Dawson, Dawson Street, Dublin.
Oh.
He was a famous banker up in Dublin, and he bought, obviously, Temple Michael for a bit of a summer
yes.
Things. But he was a big banker in Dublin, and Dawson Street gets his name from
So we have local connections with streets named after people that were here. Yeah, yeah.
And just another by and by kind of thing. And one thing, and Frank actually said it to me as well. Frank Mills said it to me because I said like that. Our beautiful Kathleen and May. We went up to Janeville, unloaded, and we backed all the way down.
Yes,
but
yes.
As a kind of a by and by, just by chance, I suppose, more so than anything else, I actually went up the Bride since our last that show as well.
Did you? Yeah, yeah.
It's huge. I just couldn't get over the actual wit of the Bride.
Of the Bride, yeah, yeah.
And it was really, really. And we went up past Janeville as well. I was with my comrade in arms, Maurice O'Connor, there as well.
Yes.
He was in another boat.
Yes.
And we got up as far as Tallow Pier.
But
they are wide. Tallow Pier and Janeville, they had widened around the area as well.
Yes.
For big boats. But Frank said he thought it was only one or two boats that I ever had to back down as well.
Yes, you were saying that last year, boats had actually backed down. And that's a hard thing to do, like.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But that was kind of the recap on where we were. And so at the moment, if you remember the last time, we were actually at Killahalla Pier.
Killahalla Pier,
and it's up near Capoquin.
Yes.
And it's the last of the what we call the deep water berths anyway at this stage. And again, it was like all pit props and all that kind of good stuff as well we mentioned. So as I said, we were getting into a smaller boat. The lads were on loading on the old wood onto the
pit props.
But as we're standing actually on the pier itself, and this is the best place, you know, if you're travelling by car, again we're talking about cars, if you're travelling by car, the best place ever is to stand on the find Killahalla Pier, stand on the pier, look across the water. You're looking straight then at Dromana Castle. You know, Dromana House, at this stage. But Dromana Castle itself was built in the 1200s, seat of the Fitzgeralds. Now, the Fitzgeralds, the Desmonds, obviously not, but these were the Lord of the Dacia, and they were a junior branch of the Earls of Desmond. So they were all family members, by the way, and it was feudal family members.
Yes.
But I suppose, like, if you go further then in the 1670s, the Fitzgeralds' heiress, Catherine, married. This kind of brings us up to date with the names. Mm. Catherine married Colonel Villiers. So that's, you know, we're talking
Villiers Stewart, in Villiers Town.
So that's where that kind of name came into it.
Mm.
The house was then built, the big house then, because it was built in the 1780s, but a complete refit was done in the 1840s by Lord Stewart himself.
Mm.
But in the kind of the 1960s, then at that stage, Dromana was sold to a cousin of theirs. But it was just a white elephant.
A lot of these houses, like, you know, they suffered the same fate. They were too big.
You know, the old estates weren't there anymore, so there was no kind of money coming in as well. So you had to have a lot of money to have these places. So what they did was he demolished a lot of the actual building.
Yes.
So what we see today is fairly big,
yes,
but it's only a fraction of
the original.
What was there. I'll tell you, there's actually a lovely picture of the Dewadden being loaded with pit props actually at Killahalla. And if you look across and look carefully at that photograph, because it shows nearly the full, we'll say, house then as well.
Dromana House,
before it was actually knocked down as well, anyway. So that was a good one. But as I said here, happily, James Villiers Stewart was able to repurchase the house in the 1980s. His widow Emily still lives there, along with their daughter and family.
Hang on.
A place you can visit. Again, guys, there's a lot of these places we're talking about tonight, or today, this morning, and you can visit all these places as well. Have a look and Google the house.
They can bring it straight there, and you'll be able to see it, yeah.
But
what
amazed me still with Dromana is the Fitzgeralds still live there. From the day they moved in,
the bloodline maintained. There. But that was a feature, like the bloodline was always maintained down through the years, wasn't it?
And even we'd say, and so I suppose, you know, some remarkable people, there was a lot of remarkable people went through Dromana, the likes of Dromana. But one we kind of know is Catherine. The Catherine was the Countess of Desmond. Her husband was Thomas. We're talking about Raymond Legros. Legros was a kind of an AKA nickname. They all had, it's like gangster names with these guys, so it's going to be AKA. Thomas, AKA the Bald Fitzgerald.
Well, needless to say, like, how he got the bald name, you probably had no hair.
Absolutely.
A bit like Sean Toomey.
A bit like Sean. Good morning, Sean.
We're talking about you. So,
but it says here that Catherine, you kind of always know her as the old Countess. She died in 1604, supposedly from falling out of a cherry tree, and reputed at the age of 140.
Yeah, she, that's...
There's
a little bit of a tale tales attached to that, because I think at one stage we heard actually she was pushing her daughter around in a pushchair or something like that.
Well, that was in England. So you're dead right, because she was kind of trying to, and the daughter was so old that she had to be pushing around the chair. It was in England in protest. Was to some of the lands or something like that? Now, this is where I think this is getting mixed up, and I'd have to go back to the, I suppose, the real historians now, you know, the way, because I think there was Catherine in Inchiquin Castle, which is out the road.
Yes.
And then there was Catherine in Dromana Castle. And I think they're merging the two of these Catherines into one. But I think it was Inchiquin Catherine pushed her elderly daughter
at the tender age of 147 or whatever. I don't know. Look, there's tears attached to that, but as you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, but yeah, I think they are kind of mentioned. But it's a good old story. And like even the cherry tree that she was supposed to fall off, it was supposed to have been planted by Sir Walter Raleigh himself. He was at fault.
Exactly, But amongst other things, like, you know, he did. But look.
Absolutely. You know, but another guy there, I would say, was Lord Stuart of Deese, the Dacia himself.
Yes.
As you know, like, these were, like, he was a Protestant aristocrat, large landowner, but he'd radical views, Noel. Yeah. As a young man, he defeated the Waterford establishment in the famous 1826 election to give Daniel O'Connell and the Catholic Emancipation Movement their very first member in Parliament.
Oh, yeah.
So he was a Daniel O'Connell man.
He was a Daniel O'Connell man.
It
was unusual for any member of the landed gentry to come over here. Absolutely. and go to the other. But a number of them did around the country.
Absolutely.
A number of them did.
As we said it before and other things as well, it wasn't a Catholic and Protestant thing then. It was just fairness, you know, as a lot of people found
about. Exactly, that was it.
It was just a fairness thing, it was good. I don't know, Noel, if people in y'all have never seen Dromana Gate Lodge, they have missed a lot. They should definitely get to see this.
Yes, and I have seen it, and, you know, I have looked at it, and it is... It is obviously complete with the onions and the onion structure on top. Like, it's a bit like the onion structure on top of the Regal Cinema.
Absolutely, that's right.
It is obviously of Indian design, isn't it?
Well, it was. But what was actually fun enough was, we'll say, it's a Hindu Gothic structure. So this is a gate. We'll say this is a bridge, but there's a gate going into it. So this is the kind of really from the Capoquin side. This is the entrance into Dromana from the Capoquin side, and you can go in there because the Dromana estate kind of is open. But as I said, for you check out what that the actual house is if it's open or not. But as you're coming from Capoquin, the easy way to say it, if you're coming from Capoquin, you're heading for Dungarvan. Basically, as you just come out of Capoquin, there's a bad turn in the corner. You turn right there, and then you just go down there a small bit and you turn right again, and that'll bring you straight over the bridge, carry on through the estate and into Villiers Town from the other side. At that stage.
I've seen it all from the Villiers Town side, the Villiers Town. But I know there was one stage, I think, people were asked for the explanation of this, and apparently from, I don't know, is it hearsay or not, but this was supposed to be built in India, and the one in India was supposed to be built here, but plans got mixed up.
Funnily enough, and I only read it because I was reading Bill Power's book on Blackwater, and he was talking about the old RIC, the Garda station in Ballyduff.
Yes.
And they were saying exactly the same thing about this was supposed
to be mixed up. But it wasn't. It was a waiting present, I think, was it?
It was indeed, because what it was was... It was the gate. We'd say the Gate Lodge itself was built in 1851, and was the inspiration from the Brighton Pavilion. That's where they have this onion shaped Gothic tower,
which was very, very prevalent. Of course, back in the 1850s and the 1830s, the Victorians were besotted with any Oriental, Indian. I think it's all like that, we'll say Egyptian stuff. Absolutely. Like that, they would be sotted with this kind of thing,
It was, and you're right too, because it was erected as a wedding gift for two newlyweds by Henry Villiers Stuart himself.
Oh, very good.
But and again, if you look at the date, built in 1851, famine times, you know what I mean. So this is probably just famine relief as well anyway. So we're still in our rowboat at this stage. We're after leaving Dromana Castle. We're in our kind of a rowboat. We're heading up river. We're going to go all the ways up the river to, as I said, to Lismore. But on the way up, we're after passing the Dromana. The next bit was where the Battle of Afan was.
There's
a famous battle called the Battle of Afan. Right. Now, I always, you know, initially I heard it was the Fitzgeralds against the Ormonds. We'll say the Butlers against the Fitzgeralds.
Yes.
So the Desmonds against the Earls of Ormond. But, and I always thought it was the Desmond, I would say, from Drumanna Castle.
Mm.
But as it happened, it wasn't. What it was, so in 1564, we'll say, what happened was Queen Elizabeth was on the crown at the time, or on the throne at the time.
Yes.
Things were kind of thrown into a bit of chaos because two of the of her, we'll say, most influential of the old English families began to quarrel in the south of Ireland.
Yeah.
And we'll say this kind of, at the same time, there was a guy up in the north, Shane O'Neill, but he was a.k.a. the Proud.
Yeah.
So Shane the Proud O'Neill was forcing his neighbour clans in Ulster to accept his dominance over him. You know the way they all wanted one guy?
Yes.
And then the Earl of Desmond kind of probably saw what he was at, wished to assert his dominance over his cousin, the Earl of Ormond, because they were family.
Yes.
By the way, it was like they were actually family. They were cousins through marriage. The two families were real hereditary enemies. They were absolutely, they hated each other. Thomas Butler was the head of the Ormonds. He was the 10th Earl of Ormond, and he was called a.k.a. Tom Dove, so Black Tom.
Yeah.
And he was also a blood relative of Elizabeth II.
Oh.
So Queen Elizabeth. So he was, I think, so if anything was going to go wrong, he was in favour anyway, straight away. You know that.
Yes, yes, yes.
But he was a blood relative of Elizabeth II through her mother, Anne Boleyn. So there was the Anne Boleyn connection as well. And then what it was Sir Maurice Fitzgerald of Daisha, so Drumanna Castle, was angered by the Earl of Desmond imposing feudal rights upon him. So his own Earl, or the Earl of Desmond, who's Gerald Fitzgerald, I think his cousin was Maurice Fitzgerald from Drumanna was a bit angered by him because he was, but I think it was about kine and livery, Noel, and this kine and livery was, you know, if you came to somebody's house, you stay in their house, they give you dinner.
Yes.
Now if you have an army with 4,000 people, you know, it's a bit different,
because it's a bit different.
You have to give, and you have to kill the best cow, and you have to do all the best things and all that. It costed these guys a fortune. So a lot of people just absolutely hated this kind of thing about kine and livery. It's free entertainment.
And that's what was kine and livery actually was, that if you went to a place like that, you were, you know, it was expected, the meal was expected to be put on the table,
oh,
and you were put up for the night, etc., etc.
And it was expected, but especially you had to feed his soldiers, and it was his soldiers that would be putting you to knife if you didn't feed them.
If you didn't feed them. And there could be 4,000 of them out in the front
door. Absolutely.
So
you can see why people were getting kind of a bit upset
over it.
And
it was called coin and livery.
And livery. And so you had to put them on. And sometimes they used to stay, not for a night, like they might stay for a month as well. So this, I think this happened in Connacht Castle as well. Where they
your coffers would be completely empty by a month's time.
The whole place would be, you know. You have to say, I'm heading off to Spain for 2 weeks. Sorry about that, buddy. You're not staying with me.
I wonder, is that the expression, did H out of house and home came from?
Probably was. But what it said here was on the 1st of February 1565, the two opposing forces met at Afan.
Yes.
It's a ford on the River Finisk, which is a tributary of the Blackwater. It's just above Drumanna, between kind of Drumanna and Cappoquin there.
Mm.
And the ensuing battle, over 300 of the Fitzgerald men were killed. Many of them drowned because they were trying to escape the Ormonds guys, the Butlers. The Earl of Desmond attempted to charge straight for Ormond. He just wanted that guy.
Yeah.
But on his way over, he was shot in the leg and captured. It is said as the Butlers carried him off the field, a Butler called out in mockery, "Where is now the great Lord Desmond?" And they said the Earl of Desmond propped himself up on the shoulders of the two soldiers that were carrying him. And he said, "Where but in his rightful place on the necks of the Butlers?" Don't you just love this guy?
Yeah. He wasn't going to be put down easy, was he?
Not at all, not at all. Mm. And it was a good one because, like we'll say, Elizabeth II obviously went with her cousin, her favourite cousin. Mm. And so she had Fitzgerald, Gerald Fitzgerald, his brother John, James, and had him thrown into the Tower of London, and they spent 7 years there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a funny story because at the end of it, they said that one of the conditions of the release was that Gerald Fitzgerald had to shake hands with
butler.
Tom Dove.
Yeah.
And what happened was they were supposed to meet in some place in Dublin in a house, and which they did.
Yeah.
And then the two parties kind of said, you can't have these two boys facing each other. So they actually got a door, cut a hole out of it, and two
boys. Ah, go away. So they shook hands
without eye contact.
Cut a hole in the door, stick out your hand there.
Yeah, that was very good. Because they didn't want the two boys looking at each other when they were doing
that's
it.
That's very good.
And that was it. And they named the house and all that as well. And listen, guys, this battle is very kind of important, I suppose, for us in Youghal, for the whole Blackwater region, because the Fitzgeralds didn't stop. He was very angry and he went on a rampage, basically. And what ended up was Water Rally. You know the way?
Yeah,
and the Water Rally, the whole kind of... So they were brought in to put this rebellion down. And it was like the first and second rebellion, and it was put down then, and it was Water Rally then. And what happened was, as they always say in history, before Water Rally, after Water Rally.
Yes.
And it was all the Fitzgeralds before Water Rally, and then it was afterwards then. A very quick one. There was a guy called Valentine Greatorex.
He was a healer, wasn't he?
And there was a girl actually locally in Youghal. I think is it down near the credit union. They bought a house, and I think there was a signed document by Valentine Greatorex there as well. She found it in the house.
Yeah,
I think she was on local the local news and all that kind of stuff as well. So this guy, but. Like he was, you know, whether he was a healer or not sure, but what he was, they said he was a healer born a fan. We just did the Battle of a Fan.
Yeah.
Valentine attended, we'll say, the Lismore Free School up until the age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
And spent some of the time in the army of Roger Boyle. Roger Boyle would be the Earl of Cork's son.
Yes.
Lord Broghill, we'd know him. We did Ardmore. Mm. That was Lord Broghill. So he was probably over in Ardmore as well, God bless him. But in 1662, he began to feel that he'd powers to cure people of tuberculosis, also known as the King's Evil. He cured some young lad and became famous, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And he changed, we'll say, what he did was he used his stables, barns, malt house as temporary lodgings and also ran clinics here in Youghal. So he come down to Youghal, and that's where probably the house that probably.
Yeah. I wonder, was he a faith healer? Was he a chancer?
Well,
it's hard to know, isn't it, really?
I'd say he thought he was a faith healer, but probably was a chancer. But not being a chancer, you know, I think he thought that if he kept doing it long enough. Like, you know, when you get sick, some people just heal, you know the way.
Yeah.
And this guy was sessions. That's what they said was, you know, he'd have sessions. So it wasn't the fact that he was just, you know, arriving and then walking away 5 minutes later and you're healed. You know, get up, you're not, you know, you're not blind anymore. Your leg is thing. No, he was all sessions. So they were probably healing themselves.
He probably had a great power of persuasion as well.
He did.
And he could persuade people. That, you know, if you were sick, he could persuade you that you're better and you'd walk out the door. Oh, he cured me.
But he failed a lot because that was the problem where he ended up, because he was in England and he was kind of travelling around the place, and there was a couple of the high and mighties and it didn't work. And he was actually even Charles II, because remember now our friend Oliver Cromwell is gone. Charles II is the next guy back.
Yes.
Oliver Cromwell cut his dad's head off
at
the time, but he was called to him, but he failed in the court. We'll say when he was at court, and they discredited him, and as he was very disillusioned afterwards, came back to a fan and just carried on farming, said nothing more, and went out. That was it.
So,
And like, it's a funny one, because they say a fan is, you know, we're heading up the river.
Yes,
it's on your right hand side, the starboard side of our boat. But he was actually, I think he was born in what's called Norris Island Castle, but that's on the left hand side. So they must have a land,
probably on both sides
of the river.
My goodness.
So we're heading up nicely now, Noel. We were going to get Capoquin out of the way now as well.
We won't
be too long.
Yes.
But what it was we're just coming into Capoquin. We're coming around the corner here now in Capoquin. Capoquin, the name in Irish Oscuelga, we'll say the English version is Tillage Plot of Conn. That's what it means, Capoquin.
Tillage Plot of Conn.
So obviously it was just a farm, you know the way I had to tell you.
Yeah.
And it's, I'll go backwards a small bit. I meant to say this actually, Noel, because while we were just coming up to Capoquin, do you know the old railway bridge?
You
can see the old railway bridge.
The Iron Bridge.
And we'll say that was built in 1878 and closed in 1967. So it went on for about 90 years, Noel.
Yes.
It was, you know, fair things. But just as we're coming underneath it, you can't see it, you know, from our boat, but there's a house called Kilbree House, and it's believed that this is the area where St. Declan was born.
Oh,
so then yes. St. Declan was kind of like a Capoquin lad, as
well,
I said.
Was he? Because a lot of people thought he was from actually Wales.
That's
side.
Right. Because yeah. Remember we were doing Ardmore and we were talking about it. I said he probably never left Waterford, God bless him.
Yeah, yeah. So I reckon that he was Capoquin.
Capoquins, yeah. Well, they had him between Capoquin and Lismore.
Yes.
You know the way? That's where they had him for.
Yes.
So there'll be different places claiming him anyway.
I know,
Did the whole lot of it as well. So we're just underneath the bridge. We're heading into Capoquin now as well. Beautiful, you know, even from where we are now as well, Noel, and just as you're coming into Capoquin from the all side.
Yes.
It's at the, we'll say, the foot of the Knockmill Down Mountains. Knockmill Down means Muldowney's Hill. Muldowney's Hill. Famous, you know, everybody knows as well, Capoquin famous for its fishing, you know, lots of salmon fishing.
Yes.
And the boys boating, you know, the good boating club there.
Yeah, that's right. So the Capoquin Boat Club show was involved, so that's why it was built, I suppose.
That's right.
It
was indeed. Yeah. Mm. But you can, again, when you're in Capoquin, there's a lot of lovely little places to visit now, to be honest with you. But Capoquin House and Gardens.
It's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. Yeah,
well worth it, guys. Mm. Get up there. Mm. It's a Georgian mansion built in 1779, and it was built on the old Fitzgerald Castle, so it was, obviously another castle there as well. But the house was burnt in February 1923 during the Civil War. But Sir John Keane fully restored it. Now, there's loads about the Keanes, and they seem like a good family. And I was kind of wondering why they would have been burnt out, because, like Ballantrae as well, they were kind of good family as well. The basement was a hiding place.
Yeah.
The Keanes were very good to both. Catholics, Protestants didn't matter at all. But what it was Sir John Keane, he kind of became, like, I'm going to say a free stater, but it wasn't really, you know. He joined the Parliament, and he was actually involved, I think, in the peace negotiations and all that.
Yes,
so I'd say the local IRA brigade.
And I'd say,
in fairness to Sir John Keane, he wouldn't have been, their house would have definitely been left alone, because they did so much for the likes of the Capoquin area as well. Anyway, they were good landlords, you know, the way that's the...
And it's a pity, because a lot of these houses were actually burnt down at the time of the Troubles and the time of the air, which is a great pity. A lot of the houses were burnt down.
Well, it was, but, like, there was a kind of a thing about the absentee landlord as well, because...
Oh, yes, you know, of course, that was... And the main
thing was Michael Collins, because it was a directive from Michael Collins at the time, because the Black and Tans was famous for burning people's houses down.
Yes.
I think it was Michael Collins said, for every one house he burned down, we'll burn 3 years. And that's basically... And it was brought up in the English Parliament, tell the Black and Tans to stop burning our houses, burning houses, because they're burning our houses. So it was a serious kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it worked. You know,
it did,
at the end of the day, it worked.
Yeah.
But you can see there was a two kind of leverage there was absentee landlords, don't give them a place, get them out of the country.
Get them
out
of the country,
But there's a lovely little car park, we'll say, in Capoquin. If you're going into Capoquin, there's a nice little place to park, but the old quay is down there, Noel, and there's a little car park there, there's a little park there as well. And if you go down, there's a little slipway as well, you can actually see the old quay. But once the bridge, you remember where the bridge is now, the railway bridge, once that was built, obviously the boats couldn't come up there anymore.
Yeah, that was it.
So there was a new kind of pier put down past.
Yes. That was by the
shippers.
Yeah.
Was it called Shipper's Quay or something like that? They used to call it. So the old quay is still there. The actual old quay walls and all that is still there as well. Anyway, and all. As you're coming, we'll say we're kind of coming up, still rowing away in our boat. We're coming now up to the Stonebridge.
Oh yes,
and,
yes.
You know, if you go over Campfire Bridge and all that, you'll head up and you'll come over the Stonebridge, beautiful Stonebridge. It's called the Avonmore Bridge now.
The Avonmore Bridge.
It was, when it was built, it was called Victoria Bridge.
Of course, after Queen Victoria.
I think they said in the middle there was a little, that was a very skinny bridge, but in the middle of it there was a little plaque, but I think it was chiselled out
by the boys
at the time. And again, this is a famine relief. So this was built, we'll say, between 1850 and 51. And again, by the Keane family. So again, they were doing a lot, you know, for the things. There was earlier bridges there, and all in the same spot, made out of wood. And one was actually built and paid for by the Earl of Cork in 1666.
Right.
So it was... you know, this is kind of a bit of a sad one, because I suppose every town has their bits, but There was the Sisters of Mercy ran a place called St. Michael's in Cappoquin. It was one of 26 industrial schools there in Ireland. It opened in 1877, and as it had, at its height, it had nearly 100 children. We'll say there was 100 children at St. Michael's. It became a group home in 1974 and finally, thankfully, closed in 1999. St. Michael's was exposed in the media in recent years, including the abuse that was carried out by nuns and staff members. The story, there's a brilliant book, I have it in my hand here at the moment, Noel.
Yeah.
Have it here. Recalled
The God Squad. The God Squad.
Paddy Doyle.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it was Martin McCarty. McCarty, the pipe band McCarty Clan fame.
Yes.
Martin, thanks, if you're listening, thanks a million for this again, because it was Martin kind of put me onto this, because I was saying to Martin how we were living in Tallow at the time, and my parents, like, there was six of us kids there, and we were all young, and the parents then used to take three of the lads at all the holidays.
Yes.
So a lot of houses did it though.
A lot of houses and took the lads,
We had three of the lads. And but like that was nine kids probably under the age of 12 in one cottage. You know, I'd say it was a bit
houseful signs were up then, definitely.
And I used to think, Jesus, these lads must be going home, you know, back to St. Michael's for a rest. But after reading, we'll say, from Martin, they're telling me after reading The God, and I got the book, The God Squad, after reading that, I said, you know, we should have kept them 365 days of the year, really.
And that's the great pity, because you see, that St. Michael's was echoed all over the country. And basically, it was society's fault, because that's what society condoned this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they turned the blind eye to it, as we all know, and it was accepted as the norm culture of the time.
Yeah.
And as we all know.
But it's brilliant that there is books like The God Squad out there.
That people can tell their story.
And this, because like Paddy was there, Paddy Doyle was there, and he's telling his story, but he's telling the story of every single student that was in that place as well.
Yes.
So thankfully that is well and truly gone now at this stage.
Yes, yes, yes.
And one thing we brought up before was the foundry. We said there's So, and what it said, Noel, was this is kind of taken from another book I got. Was in Tallow, the iron ore was dug out, which we're talking about Tullochy Iron, the Hill of Iron, and it was dug out and carried to the banks of the river Bride, where it was smelted and shipped from there to Cappoquin to the cannon foundries, and this is based in 1620s. A later foundry then was manufacturing farm equipment, iron ore, we'll say it was the iron wharf, farm equipment, but it was Stanley. And remember that we were talking about Stanley Waterford.
Stanley Stoves and the whole lot. Yeah. So Pierce's of Wexford as well, I think.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. They were all involved in it.
Yeah.
But they said actually even there was iron ore pits in Cappoquin as well, at Salter Bridge House. Still iron ore. There must be a lot of iron ore.
There must be a lot of iron ore.
But funny enough, one of the Stanleys, Charles Stanley, a great patron of Cappoquin Rowing Club and the son of one of the club's founding members, Charles Stanley was one of the most successful businessmen in the mid-20th century Britain, with the famous Pye television company.
I remember the name Stanley.
We're talking about Bobby Chaplin with
Bobby
the
Chaplin
pie,
and the pie inside over the door. He was one of the chief whips of the Pye radio and television company in Cambridge.
And like we're coming up to a kind of a near enough to the end of this one, this session now here. But if you're there, actually, you have to go into Baron's Bakery. If you want the Blair.
I remember the late John Young talking about
it's beautiful.
The Blair.
We used to buy them just for burgers. Instead of having burger buns.
They're a bun, aren't they?
I think it's a French. You know, this came from the French because we'd say we'd be talking about Mayo Mallory, but. And do you know something, Noel? The French baguette, you know, the long stick.
The baguette,
French stick, we call it, the things.
Yeah.
That was actually a military, invented by the military.
Oh, was it?
It was, because, we'll say, the guys with the muskets, you know, they had a musket holder.
Yeah, yeah.
So they made the bread long so it could fit it in with
into
their muskets, into the musket bag. And then they could be kind of pulling it out.
Taking a nibble at the same time. Oh, my goodness,
But again, Noel, we were talking again last time about, we'll say, Yall changing its course, or sorry, the Blackwater changing from Yall outside, and Whiten Bay, you know, went out through Whiten Bay and all that. But the Blackwater, right, from start to Capoquin, from the source to Capoquin.
Yeah, from Kelly to Capoquin, yeah.
It's heading east. So it's coming from the west, it's heading east. And all of a sudden it
takes a southern turn, doesn't
it? It's 90 degree angle. But what they said was, back in the olden days, again the time of the Ice Age, it carried on straight to Dungarvan Bay. So it went out through Dungarvan. So the road today from Capoquin to Dungarvan, you're actually on the riverbed. And then it deposited. And what it was because, if you think of it, the ice travels south.
Yes.
So it's moving south all the time. It doesn't go east or west or anything. Yeah. So that carved out a channel during the Ice Age.
And there was no reason to doubt that the ice suddenly took a downward spiral from here.
As you said,
it probably went straight on.
And it just carved out a kind of a new route for it.
Yeah.
But the old route was Dungarvan Bay. And I think they're after proving it as well, because they're after finding, you know, for geology side of things, they're after proving that this was the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a good one.
Well, any excavations around there would turn up beside the remains of seashells and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Inland.
Inland.
The same as what's been turned up over there in the side of Whiting Bay.
And there was caves and there was different things like that, but they found that there was, you know, it was fish life that was inside there as well anyway at the time.
My goodness.
But and we're just very briefly, Noel, I know we're coming up to the end of this one here, still kind of in Capoquin, just outside Capoquin, Mount Mellery.
And I keep saying
whatever religion you are, or even no religion, visit Mount Mellery. It's the most amazing place.
Don't
go up there if it's raining. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a nice day like today, you know, and all this kind of stuff as well. Mount Mellery up the mountain, because you're up the Knockmill Down Mountains as well. You know, you're up there as well. It's just 10 minutes drive from the town of Capoquin. This was established in 1832, Noel, and still operates today as we know as well. And I think it's the Scouts as well, has its Irish headquarters there as well, and a few other things as well. But how it happened was the French government forced out all foreign monks of the Cistercian monastery in France. Mellery in France.
Yeah.
It was in Brittany.
So that's where the name came from.
Absolutely.
It came from France.
So there was an abbey still there in called Mellery.
Yeah.
It's just north of Nantes. It's in the province of Nantes, we'll say. So it's still there. And that's still there as well. I googled it before it came out. And that's actually still there. So you can visit Mellery, both in Ireland and in
France. That's fascinating. So you're right actually about what you said about Mount Mellery. If you ever, no matter what religion you are, if you want to find a little bit of inner peace and a bit of sanctuary in your soul or your life, head up to Mount Mellery.
It is
a wonderful experience.
And you know, there's so many walks up there as well, and kind of on the mountains as well. It's just fantastic. But again, this we'll say what it was yeah, there was a group, like it was the French actually kicking all foreigners.
Kicking them off,
stage.
Same as Henry did in England, but same thing, you know.
But it wasn't. It was just, and they came here and they were looking for land, we'll say. Again, the Keane family. It was the Keane family granted their wishes. No, these would have been Catholics again. Keane's would have been Protestants.
Yes.
And he granted, and we'll say they established Mount Mellery Abbey. And to be honest with you, Keane was a smart man, because what it was they were the landlords, right? They had all the lands.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was he said no tenants would take the likes of the mountain land, you know, the farther up the mountain nobody wanted. This guy knew that these guys will come in and they'll just do wonders, you know the way? And they did.
They did, yeah.
And
yeah,
they did.
Yeah, yeah.
So then he was kind of proven to everybody, hang on a sec, if these lads can do it, you can do it.
Exactly.
So I can rent my land, you know the way, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was to try and get more farmers to kind of work the land.
It's hard work
at the start, but once you get in there, then there was things. One of the things there was Bill Power, I have his book in front of me again, The Black Water, and it's the history and images. It's a fantastic book. Look at that size of it all. This is a winter book for me, by the way.
This is something that you would actually study during wintertime, and you would take it all in. Yeah,
But Bill, I met Bill Power in Mitchelstown. He's a Mitchelstown man.
Yes.
He knows all the lads here very well. He knows Mike Hackett as well very well.
Mm.
But we were talking about Mitchelstown Castle.
Oh, yes.
And I said to him, Bill, where is Mitchelstown Castle? You know the way, I don't know anything about Mitchelstown Castle. And he said, it's not here. But he said, did you ever visit Mount Mellery? And I said, I have. And he says, well, the stone from Mitchelstown Castle was sold and built Mount Mellery. And I think Glencairn Abbey as well, near Tallow as well.
Yeah.
Some of it went there as
My
well.
My goodness.
So we're talking about the stone being valuable. They were selling castles, you know.
Oh,
I mean?
Yeah, but the same happened over us in Kingsale Big.
Absolutely.
The same thing with the Fisher Mills, yeah. Same thing.
And to go backwards, we were talking about Temple Michael House, and they said what it is the cornerstones. They said, it was Niall O'Brien said it on his piece on the things, and he said that it was from the castle. So they would say Temple Michael House was built from Temple Michael Castle as well.
Yes.
But this was actually sold. So it says Mitchelstown Castle, they sold all the stone from it.
Yeah.
And transported it all the ways to One Mile Reach. It was just
That was a huge undertaking.
Absolutely.
A huge undertaking.
Fair dues to him.
Yeah,
so happy days. So that's kind of
that's where we're at this week anyway, Mike.
Yeah, we've another one anyway to go.
We've another one to go. And we're certainly looking forward to better. And as we always say, as I always say at the end of the program, still the gaze and still the wonder grew that one small head could carry all it knew. Mike, we're indebted to you as per usual.
Thanks very
and
much.
We're certainly looking forward to your contribution next week as we continue our journey in around the backwaters, you could say, of the Blackwater.
Thank you.